You know, so you would have to open a case against your broker.
When someone is badly treated by a broker, name bad brokers.
Yeah, let's
Bob,
do it.
Bob, John, Jim, Harry. Hello, we are the Two Fat Brokers. I'm Ben from Abu Dhabi.
I am Barney from Dubai.
And today we're going to talk about something seemingly extremely boring, regulation of brokers, but interesting in where do you complain to.
Before we start, I would just like to compliment you on your motorbike helmet. I didn't realize that you owned a motorbike.
Yeah,
what type
got it
of
for
motorbike
Christmas.
Is it?
It's a blue one. Got it for Christmas. It's pretty cool.
What noise does it make?
Vroom.
Excellent.
Yes, where do you complain to about brokers? How can brokers stop doing bad broker things?
Naughty.
What could the powers that be do to make them comply? And just general, your chance and our chance to vent about bad brokers.
Again,
I've been a bad broker.
This has been a much used
topic.
Well,
here we can maybe be a bit more specific and constructive opposed to just whinging. Name bad brokers.
Yeah, let's
Bob,
do it.
Bob, John, Jim, Harry. Nah,
they're
know.
All English.
Yeah, other brokers are available. So when someone is badly treated by a broker, where do they complain in Dubai?
You go to RERA.
Yeah,
you go to RERA. RERA are, and I've been on both sides of RERA actually, RERA are an advisory board. They are not able to adjudicate. So they can bring both parties together and hopefully hash out some kind of happy agreement betwixt the two. But ultimately, if you want to take things further forward, you have to go down the legal route.
Legal route being?
So you would have to open a case against your broker.
Uh-huh.
Or if your broker feels like he's been unjustly treated by you, you would have to open a case against your aggressor.
Client?
Yeah, client. But the interesting thing about the judicial system here is you can open a case against someone for anything. So I can open a case against you because I didn't like the way you drank that water. The courts would obviously throw it out of the case of first instance, but it is an option that you have. And you would cost you, I think it costs about 25,000 to 30,000 dirhams to open a case, plus your legal fees. So that's kind of, the barrier to entry to just being a wally and just going around suing people. But that is, that's an interesting factoid I discovered when
that might even be the case in the UK. I mean, the difference is with crime. So crimes need to be prosecuted by the Crown Prosecution
Service.
These would
be civil courts.
But I'm guessing even in the UK, you can open a civil case for anything. Even drinking water, I would guess. I should
real
probably know that.
The way you drink water, all these people open cases against you.
Yeah, so I don't think it's any different, but obviously for crime there needs to be a threshold because the government persecutes crime.
Well,
whereas
I mean,
for civil,
do you remember when bouncing a check here was illegal for any amount?
Yeah, I mean it's still illegal, but now it's civil rather than criminal.
I mean obviously the higher the amount, I don't believe that the police get involved for anything under 200,000 dirhams. I think that is my knowledge.
There is something around.
There
that,
is a threshold.
I've heard multiple stories, but yeah.
So yeah. So I mean, if let's assume you have been poorly treated by your broker. So in Dubai, you go to RERA. RERA obviously then try and bring both parties together and find an amicable solution. And failing that, you go through the judicial system. What about in Abu Dhabi?
And here and in Dubai, would they also ask for like an expert opinion? And would they go to RERA for that? Do you know?
Would RERA ask for an expert opinion?
No, the courts.
The courts ask for an expert opinion, yeah.
And do they go to RERA for that?
They do.
Yeah?
They
okay.
Do.
So, I mean, they're, I guess, they're then a consultative body to the courts. So they could possibly not rule on whether their rules and regs have been broken, but advise.
Advisory board or advisory body.
Mm.
But they don't, they don't really, the point of first contact, they don't have the ability to demand that one individual has been wronged by another.
Mm.
They can simply sit down and try and marshal out a happy conclusion.
Yeah. It's similar in Abu Dhabi, but we don't have RERA. So you'd first instance, you'd probably go straight to the courts.
Okay.
Because we do have a regulatory body. It's the Department of Municipalities and Transport. But now we actually, and it's kind of gone under the radar, we do now have a specific real estate body, the name of which escapes me at the moment. So I think Abu Dhabi is going more down the route of Dubai to have a specific regulatory body. But again,
who do the courts use for a professional opinion?
So they actually have a panel of advisors. They actually advertised for them a couple of years ago.
You put your name in, didn't you?
No, because you've got to be bilingual. But they have a panel of advisors, and they often go to these advisors as opposed to ruling themselves and go to the advisor and say, you know, what do you think about this? Send me a report. And so you
it's
get
quite
the
a democratic
report.
Way of doing things, isn't it? If you think about it.
Democratic?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's appealing to the masses for their decision. The masses being an advisory board, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just one guy.
Ah.
Yeah,
it's a group.
It's not a board. No.
Oh, okay.
So it's one guy to give his opinion. I guess on the
but
market.
They call him a board. A board.
Well, you know, the board is the group of people, and it's like if you go for a valuation, so you've got a board of, you know, valuers, and you pick one at random, whatever it is.
You do three, but I get you.
Yeah. So that guy would give his report, and then the courts would consider it. It's not the way they do it in the UK. Really, the UK, you know, would normally. They would just take into account the law and the facts, and they'd make a ruling there. They wouldn't generally go for an expert opinion unless it's something super complicated. They would just make a ruling like that. But really, and I'm sure I've told you this, so a Canadian real estate agent once told me that he did a deal, and it was a priest. The priest was buying a house.
This sounds like the start of a really good joke. There was a Canadian broker and a priest walk into a bar.
It's not that good a joke. And this priest had a mobile home. And he went and he saw the house and he liked it. And then he sent the broker a question. He said, listen, my mobile home is these dimensions. Is the garage big enough for my mobile home? And the broker sent it to the seller and said, do you mind just measuring your garage? And the seller said, yeah, it's fine, it'll fit. Sent it back, buys the house, turns out it's not big enough. Now in Canada, they have a specific judge or court for real estate matters.
Mm.
So this guy went up before that judge, and the judge said, well, he asked you a question, you basically misinformed him, and it was your responsibility, not the seller's responsibility, you as the broker, and he fined him the cost to enlarge the garage, was $20,000 Canadian dollars. And he said, you pay this fine or you won't do real estate business in Canada until it's done.
Surely that broker would then go to the seller and go, well, I asked you a question, you misinformed me, so now you owe me $20,000.
Well, no, the obligation's not on him. The obligation is on the broker.
Who decides who the obligation is on?
Well, the courts.
Okay, so the courts have said, this guy asked you a question, you gave the wrong answer. Mm-hmm. Let's take out who they are. He asked you a question, you gave the wrong answer. So then, conversely, he asked you a question, you gave the wrong answer.
But it's not the seller's responsibility to get the correct information. You are the real estate expert. It is your obligation.
That's your legal obligation.
Legal obligation to give the correct information about the property. Even if you've been given the incorrect information, you should have verified it. And because he was like a bit lazy to go over there and measure it himself, he just said to the seller, go up, take your tape measure.
Imagine, there are so many lazy agents here. If you start holding their feet to the fire for the misinformation that they give you.
But amazing. I mean, that's, you know, imagine that would happen. You know, and the court was like so strict about it, and you can work through your buddy or go around to a dodgy agency and avoid this fine. They're like, listen, you want to real estate here, you know, anymore? It's $20,000 Canadian dollars fine, and there were like, you know, for a slight, I think that's more than the American dollar, the loonie.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no,
they swapped over
right.
A few years ago.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's not nothing. 100,000, not quite 100,000 dirhams, but not far off.
That's very good. That's quite a good anecdote. So, okay, so let's assume that you've been given the wrong built-up. Plots are irrefutable. It's on your affection plan. It's on your title deed. Let's assume you've been sold something and the built-up is incorrect. I've never heard of anyone have a case against them for selling something that wasn't the size that it was professed to be, you know.
Well, in the UAE, right?
Well, in the UAE,
what would happen in the UK?
In the UK, yeah. I mean, you can. I think when I was selling houses in the UK, misinformation was up to a £50,000 fine and jail time. I mean, that was only in the worst case scenario. Jail time. Wow. 3 years in jail.
And we've already established you're too pretty to go to jail.
No, I think I'd be all right in a UK jail.
With your new fancy haircut. Look at you.
And my facial. Have you seen how shiny I am?
I noticed. Yeah, you're glowing.
So, yeah, it's the worst case scenario. And I would only imagine if this is something stupendously, you know, erroneous, that you can be fined £50,000 and go to jail for 3 years.
£50,000 is about 220,000 dirhams, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a heck of a lot of money.
When I moved, so it was a bit
even
more
worse. Yeah. But the UAE doesn't have a law on misrepresentation specifically, whereas the UK law does, and I presume Canadian law does as well.
I'm sure.
Where you make money out of deliberately, or in this case, you know, negligently misrepresenting something where you then benefit.
Mm.
So. I don't know how the courts would treat that in the UAE, but certainly it's more established in the UK and elsewhere.
Let's imagine.
Use our imaginations.
That a developer sells off plan, and you buy that off plan on the strength of the floor plan that they've given you. And on that floor plan, it tells you how big your terrace is and how big your built-up is, your carpet area. Now, let's imagine that they bring in a contractor who build something that's roughly the right size. There's 5 square feet difference. What then?
Well, so in Abu Dhabi, the law deals with this specifically. And it's actually really interesting on the upside. So if it's within 5%.
The law's really interesting. Are you a lawyer?
Wow.
Did you go to Cambridge?
So no, I'm about to say something really interesting.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So if it's 5% either side, no change in what you pay. Less, 5%.
That's quite a lot.
If it's less, yeah, it can be. Yeah.
I mean, 10,000 square feet.
1,000 square meters, yeah, it can be. If it's less than 5%, then you get a discount. So if it's 6% less, you get 6% discount.
Mm.
Yeah, but 5% either side is nothing. If it's more than 5%, you've got to pay extra. More.
Well, you get it measured before you make a complaint then.
No,
right?
But imagine you're a developer and you sell all these micro studios and they turn out to be twice the size. More money, please. But I mean, and that obviously can't happen because it all gets registered in the municipality systems and stuff like that.
Sure.
But the law deals with that here.
I don't know if it does in Dubai.
I would think it would because you've got to have it all registered in the Akud system, and so you get your title deed, your Akud deed, and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I mean, you then would basically have to go measure.
Well, no, because with the whole escrow system, you know, the government kind of like...
I mean, it would also have to be a sizable cock-up from the developer, from the contractor, to build something that is not exactly as the plans that have been submitted. Because you're building a tower block. If you're... I don't know about building tower blocks, but I'm going to say if you're a couple of millimetres out in the ground level, that's just going to be exacerbated when you get to the 52nd floor, right? You know, these things have to be... You know, unbelievably precise.
Yeah, I guess so. We've had situations where the developers jumped the gun in terms of selling and taking reservation agreements for units, and then had to like redesign the building because the government's come in and said, no, you can't do this, and this. So then they've had to like actually cancel those because that was a 2-bed, it's now a 4-bed or whatever it is. So, you know, that does happen.
Anyway, we kind of digress. So obviously we're thinking about what is the best way for real estate agents to be legally marshalled.
Mm. So what do you think? So just in Dubai, what do you think it is that, let's say, real estate companies or real estate... Well, let's go with companies. What's the corners that they cut, you think? Not Crompton Saltini, now rebranded as Eden Real Estate Realty.
Other way around.
Too many reels?
Eden Realty.
Is it Eden?
I mean, if you're going to write Realty me a check, Real Estate? It's Eden Realty Real Estate LLC. But you know, that's a mouthful. So we'll just call it Eden Realty.
Yeah, it is a mouthful.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I wonder why anyone would choose that name. Keeping it real.
Shut up. I was about to make an incredibly salient point. The way that things are misrepresented is, you know, there is always this rounding up of numbers, and I mean that's really going to be you know, the thing that trips most real estate agents up. So let's say you've got a house on the Palm that is 7,900 square feet because you've had some extensions. A real estate agent will sell that or will pitch that to his buyer at 8,000 square feet, which is, it's an accepted variation in the market at the moment.
I mean, you're talking about misrepresentation there, but let's take something more general. So when you talk about a real estate company, what is it that the companies don't do well? So I'll give you an example. You know, hiring people to do business without a real license and then putting those deals through someone with a real license. Yes. Do you think that that happens?
It does.
Yeah?
It does. I know that there are companies that bring people from the UK and give them a...
Not British.
Oh, yeah. British. From Manchester. That was a terrible...
There's a direct flight. Manchester.
So they bring people in. They give them 3 months to broker. And if you sink, you sink. If you swim, you get your visa. You know, and that is, you know, it's not just one company, there's a few. So it's mitigating their losses against any potential future transaction. And if you don't make it in that 3 months, off he goes, you've only cost us a flight.
So how do they do a deal then if they don't have a visa?
Goes through another one of their, you know, goes through another, probably their line manager, you know, whoever it is that's managing their group.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're doing a split deal with another agent, it will go through that agent and, you know, you get your commission after it gets paid to the company.
Yeah. So when we talk, if we go back to our Canadian example there, where the guy says, okay, well, you've got fined 20,000 or you don't do real estate again, you know, if you don't have very robust checks on who is working for you and who they're putting deals through, you could have a mystery broker who's doing a bunch of deals and putting them through someone else.
Yeah, look,
and he doesn't have a visa and he doesn't have a license. Maybe he's got his own business and does something completely different.
It is almost impossible to marshal because, you know, because even now, you know, there are restrictions in place whereby a listing has to have the broker's RERA number attached to the bottom of the listing on Property Finder, Bayou, whatever it is you're going to use. Breathe. And, you know, those are directly connected to the, you know, the Dubai Rest app. You know, the all of the property portals have to be monitored, and they're monitored by the government. Likewise, if you're going to market anything now online, you have to have a QR code with the registered number of that Form A. So they're putting in these really good and forward thinking strategies in place, but there's nothing that's going to stop someone else listing that for someone. And even if you spot check a company, you might catch one or two, but most of the time real estate agents are out of the office. So unless you've got something that maybe places the onus on the client at the point of viewing to go show me your real estate, your RERA card, there's nothing that's going to stop these, you know, these probationary brokers from doing what they
do. But I mean, they don't exist in the UK. They don't exist, I presume, in Canada, in the US. Why do they exist here?
What exists?
Like these probationary brokers, people who haven't passed their, you know, their exams
I think in the UK, this is going back a long time.
You're very old.
That is so depressing. And true. I don't want to do that in case you see my ball pack. So I remember when I started selling houses, when I was 17, I was working before I took my what's it called? The Ombudsman of Estate Agents exam. You know, so I was doing it. I was doing business under the supervision, the guidance of the manager that I was working for at the time before I had my qualifications. I don't know if he had to register me as, you know, as a trainee or something like that. I'm sure he probably did, and that's how you got around it there. You know, but yeah, I was selling houses before I had my qualifications. So I guess it's a norm, you know, in the UK society. I know in the US you can't go anywhere near a sales transaction without your, what is it called? I want to call it a rear exam, without your brokering
articles
license.
Or something like that. Yeah, brokering license. Yeah, and they're very difficult to pass in the US. Like, people study for weeks for them. Yeah.
But also, I think in the US, you have a broker's license and then you have a listing agent's license. So that one is more hard to get than the other. So you can get a broker's, but then to get another license, which kind of elevates you above the broker's, there's another license.
Right. So then, you know, I think in the UAE, people just, because it is a big problem and there's a lot of real estate agents out there, people just maybe say like, oh, it's too big a problem, like we can't fix it. But actually, I don't really see why you can't fix it. You know,
I mean, to make
because
the fines,
it works everywhere else in the world. Well, not everywhere.
To make the fines prohibitively expensive, you know, if you're going to...
That's if you get caught, right? I mean, do people get caught or not even?
You know, if the chances of you being caught, the fines are so heavy, like in the UK, like I said before, if you get caught breaching Property Misdescriptions Act in the UK, £50,000 fine and 3 years in prison. You know, imagine how that would clamp down on you know, unregistered brokers. If you get caught doing real estate, being involved in a real estate transaction without your RERA license and without, you know, the necessary qualifications, that you're going to get fined, you know, stupid money and potentially spend time in prison. I think that would make a lot of people think twice about doing it. In fact, I know it would.
You're up for the draconian
penalties. Much more stick than carrot.
Yeah.
And then when they're unconscious, stick a carrot.
Yeah, I mean, if the fine for parking was instant death, I mean, you know, illegal parking, sorry, not just parking. The fine for illegal parking was instant death, you know, would anyone do it? You know, probably not.
I think you're gilding the lily a little bit there. But yeah, I mean, the point is, okay, is it worth the risk? You know, is it worth the risk? This is a career that I want to pursue, and you know, don't forget, it is a very lucrative industry. So there's a lot of people that want to get into this industry. But you know, it is an industry where very poorly qualified people can get into it.
I mean, I think everyone's happy that people get into it and they have the opportunity to get into it. But you know,
no one's
you should
happy.
Be.
No one likes real estate agents. Yeah.
But you should be. You know, qualified and regulated.
You should.
Yeah. And so then I think, you know, things like spot checks. Well, and I've said this before, when you reverse the incentivization, so you get like clients to police their brokers, is like if the client, you know, does a viewing with a broker and, you know, and you say to the clients, listen, you don't have to pay commission to a broker if he views with you and he doesn't have his broker license. Every client will be checking on that broker. Do you have your broker's license? Let me look at it. What's your name? Can I have your business card? And they be checking it like 100%, so that when it comes time to pay the commission, they're like, you weren't registered. Sorry, buddy.
You.
Even if someone's trying to, like, you know, squeeze it through their line manager or something like that.
Yeah.
So if you make it illegal to pay commission to an unregistered broker, and I'm doing this a lot with my hands like I'm playing an invisible piano, then chopsticks. Chopin? I don't know.
Chopin sticks.
then they do the policing for you, and they would be brutal about it.
Yeah, this goes back again to what we said before about the about kickbacks. If it was illegal to receive, if it's illegal to receive a kickback,
yeah,
or if you, yeah, I mean, same deal. But well, do you want to place that?
You make it as illegal to give one.
No, yeah, no, it's to receive one. You said you make it illegal to receive a kickback.
Oh, yeah. You make it illegal to receive a kickback.
And you can report.
So that the buyer is nervous that they'll get reported.
Exactly.
And if they get reported, the broker gets his money back.
Correct.
Yeah, so there's a massive incentive for the broker to
report. But then what you're doing, that's going to... Imagine going into a real estate market where you have to report, you have to be spot checking. All I want to do is buy a house. That's all I want to do. I don't want to...
Well, then you don't... I mean, you don't have to check whether the broker... But if you're buying a house and, you know, you're paying 100,000 dirhams in commission... And you'd be like, oh, I can save that 100,000 dirhams if, you know, I check and this guy's not registered. Then you'd definitely do it. Well, oh, you'd think about it,
is,
for sure.
And this is anecdotal. I'm not sure if it's 100% true, but there is quite a large real estate firm here that I've been told all real estate transactions that they do go through the chap who runs the company. All of them.
The gentleman.
The gentle lady. Lentleman.
Yeah,
so you know that's leaving the whole back end of the company, assuming that this person is the pinnacle, is leaving the whole back end of the company open to, you know, to run around doing what they want, which is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, what does that really look like?
But also,
does he
imagine,
have to turn up,
you know,
to every
you have
transaction?
Companies like Allsop and Allsop, FAM, you know,
Better Homes. Other companies
hundreds
are available.
And hundreds of brokers.
Yeah.
Hundreds. I think FAM recently came out and said they were the biggest. And they have 600 plus real estate agents. Imagine what their visa bills are every year. I mean, that is bonkers.
Yep.
And imagine then having to police all of them.
I mean, that's not really an excuse. I mean,
no, it's like not.
Massive
it's
companies with hundreds of thousands
really hard,
of people.
You don't have to do it. Well, yeah. Like, fair enough. You know, but I'm just saying. You know,
Mark Zuckerberg.
You would have to have a full...
you need a compliance department. Team. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to have a department inside your company just ensuring that your guys' visas and RERA cards are up to date.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to make it to make it worth their while, but you've got to make the penalties strong enough that people comply. Just like we were talking about the AML earlier, you know, the penalties have got to be there so that people comply, or else there's a massive incentive not to comply, you know, and when you talk about people bussing over like hundreds of agents from the UK, you know, then the other way is actually, you know, do interviews with those people, recruit people who you think are going to work, bring them over, get them their licenses and visas and train them and invest in those people. Otherwise, it actually, you know, kills the market because you're just like, oh, I just hire anyone. And I
Which
just,
they do.
Anyone, Which you know? Yeah, exactly. So that means then the market is awash with anyone brokers desperate to make a deal so that they can get a visa and a broker card, but they haven't, there's been no screening of them, that the company hasn't invested in them whatsoever, they're paid on commission only, and it just, you know, gives you a huge swathe of useless brokers.
What we used to do when I was Crompton Partners estate agents back in the day, you know, if
I'm Crompton
somebody...
Partners estate agents.
Are you?
Yeah.
What's your name?
It's like that Spider-Man thing. Oh, we're all pointing at each other.
Look, when, you know, I was building a team, I didn't get up to a particularly big firm. I think we got up to about 26 brokers, something like that. But if somebody approached me for a job and I liked them as an individual, but wasn't 100% sold on the fact that they would make it as a broker, I was like, look, you can join us, you'll get trained, but you'll pay for your own visa. And then when you've done your first transaction, I'll give you the money back. You know, it mitigates my risk.
Is that illegal?
I don't know. If it is illegal, we'll check and then we'll edit that out, because that never happened, really. It's an option that some people could use.
It's illegal to ask for the visa fees back, I think, if you terminate the person within a year.
Okay.
I think that's illegal. I mean,
you know, probably, you know, the cost of entry was then on the agent.
Yeah.
You know, but we weren't going to employ you if you weren't on our visa and you weren't RERA registered. You know, that's not something that we were going to do.
Yeah, so I'm much more generous. I give people visas and I also put them through the RERA exam at my own personal
No,
cost.
We do Not that.
Personal,
we do that if we're giving, we did do that if we were giving someone a job that we thought would make it. But if, you know, it only happened on two separate occasions. A guy came and I liked him and he was good. But I wasn't 100% sure that he would swim. You know, I thought he was potentially a sinker. And I was like, if you want to take the risk, you know, we have training courses inside the company that happen all the time. Sit in on them. Get onto our visa, but that's at your cost, it's your risk. But if you do make it, I'll give everything back to you.
All right. Well, I mean, we've spoken at length about one specific part of the real estate business. Anything else you think the companies do that's egregious? I think that's an American word. Egregious.
I mean,
unfair, wrong, could do better.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to paying commission. You know, there are real estate companies who, you know, don't, or they withhold the commission for longer than they should. And sometimes that is, you know, for internal financial reasons. And sometimes it's, you know, just because they can. You know,
it happens a lot in Abu Dhabi, but the Ministry of Labour, I think, are pretty good at getting those companies to pay up. Hmm. The problem is the brokers need to prove that they've done that deal. And
which means they should be RERA registered.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And everything goes through the Dubai Rest app here. So
yeah, so know. that can be a real problem. But I mean, it happens regularly in Abu Dhabi with like particularly like smaller firms, where they'll just particularly if an agent leaves the company and goes and joins somewhere else, it's like, well, you're just basically gonna have to go through the courts to get your pending commission.
So scummy as well. Mm. Like that, okay, you're probably a little bit hurt that this broker's left you. You know. Your pride is dented, but that's their money. They earned that. They use that to feed their family. You know, you have no rights to it. Pay up. You know, all right.
Yeah.
You took a hit. Move on. you know.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't retain that broker. And we actually made a guy an offer recently, and he said, well, okay, listen, I need to wait for a couple of months for my commission to come in. Mm. But then that means he's not doing any more deals with that company. So he's suffering because he's going to have a couple of like lean months, because he knows if he leaves that company, they're not going to pay him. You know, and he's going to have an arm wrestle on his hands trying to get that money out of
him. Well, this is why there was talk that the commissions and the funds for real estate transactions would be centralized. So all of the money is paid into, you know, an escrow, a government escrow account, you know, with the right coding and things like that. So, you know, it's attached to this transaction. Yeah. So are the broker's fees. So is the VAT. And it then becomes a governmental issue, not an issue, a governmental responsibility that the company is paid X, the broker is paid Y, the seller is paid, you know, Z. And everything's divvied out, and it's all taken out of the hands of the real estate companies. And then everybody's protected. And obviously the government will take a little handling fee from that. So they get an incentivization to continue the scheme.
It's just a shame that it comes to that, really.
But people, intrinsically, some people are not to be trusted.
Well, I mean, but I think, particularly when you've got companies who just do that on a regular basis, there should be stronger sanctions than, you know, okay, we found against the company, now you need to pay them the money that you owe them anyway.
Hmm.
Because then what's the incentive for the company to pay you? Like nothing. Like, okay, we got a court case, cost us a few thousand dirhams, but, you know, but if you're getting case after case after case against the same companies for the same thing, there's got to be like a much stricter sanction there. Because the company's like, well, what's my downside in this? I owe them 100,000. If I lose the court case, I pay them 100,000. There's no massive
Do you have to pay the if you lose a court case, you have to pay the fees of the other party who
sometimes, but they're small, you know.
Yeah.
The fees are often small, and so for the company, if it's a big company, they don't really care, and so then, you know, that's a way of them retaining, you know, staff having a reputation for not paying.
What people will do, what brokers will do, is if they're waiting for to be paid out from one company, you know, they'll just start doing things which are not kosher, you know, and they'll start putting transactions through the company that they're going to go join, right? Or just give the lead to, you know, to a person inside that company, and those deals will be transacted outside.
Yeah,
that's what you would do. You know, that's what happens when you put, you know, you get someone's back to the wall, they become creative.
Well, I mean, people have got mouths to feed, families, you know, school fees, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think there could definitely be a lot more. There's a lot more work to be done on that, and just in terms of punishing companies who
we've been on this topic for like 25 minutes.
Have we? Better wrap it up then.
I think we should.
We've been the Two Fat Brokers. I've been Ben from Abu Dhabi.
I've been Barney from Dubai.
See you next time.
See you.